I'm Coach Seb, and this is Running New Mexico. Joining me today is Sue Vigil McEachin. She's a Duke City Dasher, former Duke City Dasher. Had a PR of 2 minutes 9 seconds in the 800 for indoors, 2 minutes 4 seconds for the 800s outdoor running for UNM, 1976 Olympic Trials finalist in the 800, and in 2007 you were inducted into the New Mexico Hall of Fame. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, pleasure to be here. Thanks for asking.
How did you get into running?
So basically I was age group, you know, like 12, 13 years old. I was running for a parochial school, and at the end of the school year, we always had this parochial track meet with all the other parochial schools. So that really was the only competition I had ever been a part of, and ran against schools like, you know, St. Mary's and Queen of Heaven, Annunciation. I went to Holy Ghost School, and I ran into some girls who said that they were running for these track clubs, and they got to go compete at these meets around the state, and even out of state. And I said, oh, wow, I wonder how that works. And then a few days later, this guy comes knocking on our door, and it was Tony Sandoval. And he had his 8mm film, and he basically came over to our house and recruited me to join his club, the Duke City Dashers. And that was the beginning of it. And the funny thing is, you know, that was the end of the season when he came, and I didn't realize that because I didn't know enough about how the seasons work for track and field. So when I joined, I basically started training for cross country and was wondering what the heck happened to all the track meets. So I kind of missed out on that. But it was a good thing because I basically got in shape for track season, having had to run cross country beforehand.
Well, that's really kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, it kind of took me by surprise. I kept wondering when we were going to run these track meets. And it was summertime when we were basically running laps and laps around different city parks around Albuquerque. So it was good, though. It was, in retrospect, always a good thing.
Well, it's, at least in my experience, the 800 runners are always, it's a love-hate relationship with cross-country, but it does help get you in shape for sure.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Yeah. Well, the funny thing was, I was a sprinter, and so I was running 50-yard dashes, and I think we had 100 yards and maybe 220s. I keep saying yards because that's what it was when right. I started. So I never even thought about the 800 until several years later.
What did it mean to have that group in the Duke City Dashers of girls to be able to connect with and compete with at a time where, you know, I think girls' sports were still kind of coming into their own?
For sure. So there really weren't many sports at all for girls. I think there was like swimming, maybe tennis. And, you know, I just like to run, so it worked out well for me. And having a group of girls to get together on a regular basis, almost daily, we trained 4 to 5 days a week, believe it or not, back then. And, of course, you become very close friends with some of those girls, many of which I'm still good friends with to this day. It was a time when it was like you just bonded. That was, you know, because we didn't, aside from maybe our school friends, that was the only other form of socialization for us at that time.
Well, that makes sense. It must have been really nice to have that extra group to be able to hang out with as well.
Right, sure.
I definitely, when we're recruiting our incoming middle schoolers, you know, I talk to them a lot about being able to start in the summer with the cross country, and really you have a group that you're going to know going into high school, and you've already got this friend group. It kind of sounds along the same lines.
Exactly. Right. Well, because back in the day, I know I'm really dating myself, but in the 70s, we didn't even have high school track at my high school. So, you know, I didn't play tennis and I was not a swimmer. So this was a perfect opportunity, having the Dashers as a way to be able to you know, train and compete. So those really became my best friends in high school, believe it or not. It was a great group of gals. And we all, and you know, of course, many of us went to, you know, several different high schools scattered right. to the wind all over Albuquerque.
You competed AAU National Championships. You were part of the U.S. Junior Olympic team twice and a U.S. Junior National team. What were those experiences like?
They were pretty amazing. I would say that it always gave you a sense of accomplishment because, you know, even though we had our local meets and when the Dashers traveled, we traveled in groups of like, you know, there were like 100 of us on the team.
Oh, wow.
And we all looked out after each other and such. But if you made a national team, it was like nothing else. I mean, it was like all of a sudden, all the work that you did just paid off in another way. And then you had another group of friends and realized that these women or girls were just like me or just like my best friends. You wouldn't know that they were like elite status because they were in the same groups that we were in. The level of their athleticism, you know, was pretty darn good. Many of them went on to be Olympians down the road, you know, to know that you were right there with them, competing with them, and being considered part of their colleague, if you want to call it a group of colleagues at that time, even though we were young girls. It was pretty amazing, and I think it provided the sense mentally that if they can do it, I can do it, and it's not as hard as it seemed like it could be. You know, when you try to reach for the stars, you think you're never going to get there, and then all of a sudden you're right there with them. And realize that all the work that you've done and the coaching you had was absolutely phenomenal without even realizing it. For us, it was like everyday expectations. And then all of a sudden, you know, it paid off. And I was fortunate to have a group of gals to compete with at that next level.
And that's a pretty unique experience, I feel like, for that time. You know, now people can go on Twitter. There's different podcasts, mine included, where you get to hear from these people who are the top of their game, whether in the state or Olympics or whatever. And here, just really, they are just like any other runner. They have their ups and downs. Pretty amazing that you were able to see that, you know, so early in your career at a time where there wasn't that social media aspect.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I remember there was a gal, I remember watching her compete. This is a 400 meters, and I think I was maybe running 800, but I think she was so fast, but she, you know, I mean, she was faster obviously than I was because I didn't make the team at the 400. But you know, we'd go after getting together after a workout and have dinner, and she would just be like anybody else, you know, hey, let me braid your hair, let me, you know, let's go get some ice cream or something. And it was like they didn't act like they were elite athletes and such. They really just were so cool, so it made you feel like you were part of that. And you should be there. And so that was a really unique opportunity for me.
You did a dual meet as part of the national team against the Soviet Union, right?
Right.
Where was that held?
That was in Lincoln, Nebraska. So the meet that we qualified at was the AAU Nationals, Junior Nationals in White Plains, New York. And from there, they took us to Lincoln, Nebraska. And yeah, so we had like the dorms to ourselves, and there was a rushing team and then our team. And I think there were about maybe two athletes per event. So it was pretty small and very intimate. And so you really got to know some pretty good athletes in a small group of people. So it was pretty neat. Yeah.
And after that, so you ran for UNM, you were a four-time All-American and a national champion. You know, after you had that success with AAU and Junior Olympic teams, did you already have high goals for your collegiate career, or did you, as each season came, set new goals?
We set new goals each season, but coming in as a collegiate athlete, you know, already having had a taste of being able to compete at a higher level, made it, I think the expectations were even higher for me at that time. You know, getting to a national championship, it was almost expected of me. If I didn't, then, wow, you know, I'm really slipping. So the expectation was that, yes, I would make it to a national champion. you know, it's not NCAAs because it was not NCAA at the time. But to get to the national championship was sort of a given, you know. And then one year, I know, coming off an injury, I wasn't sure if that was going to happen. And I remember there being quite a bit of pressure there just to make sure I could be in shape enough to be able to qualify at the next meet, because you did have to qualify.
Right.
And so I was fortunate, I know, in being able to get to a national championship each year of my collegiate career. There was one year we didn't go, though, but that's another story.
How did you deal with that pressure of knowing the success you had already had and knowing that you belonged at those meets in the top, I guess in the top 4 or 5?
Right. So I think for the most part, the expectation was that I would get to a national championship, but I was still young enough that I was still competing at a junior level. And so the ultimate goal was for me to get on the senior level teams, eventually go to, Olympic trials. And a goal was, of course, to make an Olympic team. 76 was a really nice boost for me because, you know, I was a finalist. I finished sixth that year. Now, my time wasn't close enough to, you know, really be considered as part of the Olympic team at that time. But I was only coming off my freshman year in college. So I still had another, 4 years to train for 1980. And then 1980 came along, and of course we didn't have an Olympic team that year. So
right.
That was kind of a little bit of a, you know, knowing that we wouldn't be able to train for that Olympic team was a little bit of, it was a letdown. But by then I was already, on the verge of getting married, having kids, that kind of thing. You do after college.
Right.
So, yeah.
And I know that was a hard time for a lot of runners who felt that they would have left a mark on the Olympics to then not be able to compete.
Right. And you feel bad because it's similar to what we're going through right now with this virus thing. You know, these poor teens, poor kids are not being able to finish their high school careers. They're not getting recruited to go to colleges unless they've already made a mark. You know, they haven't had a chance to peak and show what they really have. And, in college or, now with Olympic year, how do you keep training when you don't even know when the Olympics are going to be? They'll probably be postponed, but you don't know until when. And so that really messes up your training time frame. So, I really feel for them having gone through something like that. Yeah. It's not fun. And you feel bad.
Did they have the trials that year? I know that they did for the marathon.
They actually did. And I wasn't able to run that particular trials, but I know that my ex-husband did. And he was, he had just actually missed making the team that year by like a photo finish.
Right.
And so, so there was actually an Olympic trials that year. And then, but of course, not having an opportunity to go, And then some of the athletes, it didn't work out for me that year, but there were, quite a few athletes that still were able to compete on international scenes, going to Europe. They had some pretty, I'm not sure if they had, it wasn't called the Diamond League back then, but it was getting there. It was just like the start of it.
Okay.
They were just starting that program. So there were some athletes that were still able to go, but unfortunate.
Yeah, no, it's a tough time, and it really is hard for a lot of these athletes now. I know, again, following Twitter and different social media, there have been some athletes who have said, I don't know if I have another year left in my legs, and it's a tough, mm-hmm. it's a tough situation.
Yeah, it is. But, hopefully they'll have some resiliency. That the nice thing about running is, you have a lot of muscle memory, and so it's not that hard to pick up.
Right.
Once again, unless you've had some injuries and, it has taken itself. Like you said, some people maybe don't have that in their legs anymore. But I think, I'm not sure what to think. I really don't know. It's just something, aside from not having an Olympics, not even being able to compete, I think is probably the worst part of it. I mean, you know, even in a local meet, a all-comers meet or something, you know, that's hard. You can't even do that.
No, I, you know, I do coaching at the high school level, and there are a lot of the kids who are very, you know, frustrated right now because they, for some of them, it's their freshman year and they're excited. And we actually got one meet in and one JV meet in, and they're like, oh, I'm, you know, already showing some PRs, and now, you know, it's almost back to just base building right now.
Right, right.
Like I said, it's just, you know, right now everything just is changing by the minute, and by the time I air this episode, they'll probably have an Olympic schedule out and when it's going to be. So we're all just kind of going by the seat of our pants.
Well, one thing that you do have is, you know, there's always that inner self to compete against. You've always got your times to compete against. As hard as it is that you're doing it on your own for the most part, at least they can still run. You know, they're not confined yet to being indoors or anything like that. So they can still go out and run, enjoy the fresh air, and test their legs out a little bit. But
exactly.
That's competition is more fun for sure. But
yes.
Sometimes you're not competing within yourself. That's a pretty good challenge right there, too.
You were obviously training at a high level at the time. And so I'm kind of curious, you know, if you can think back, what was your favorite workout that you did?
I think race simulations were my favorite. Something that we would do, I think we would run 300 and then like 30 seconds rest, another 300 at race pace, 30 seconds rest, and then a final 200 in, pretty much all out. And so we would do like three of those, but we'd have to do it at race pace.
Right.
So it, with very little rest between. And those were always my favorite. I like those.
Really testing your body.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was a good one.
You know, after not making it to the Olympics, not having an Olympics, you know, you became an assistant track coach at UNM in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Between that time from 1980 to the No Olympics and the 1990 joining UNM, what were you doing during that time?
So I was living in San Diego at the time and training with kind of, there were a bunch of post-collegians that were living in the area. It kind of started out as, well, my ex and I would, he was still competing, and we would go down to the local high school track and just do quarter repeats. I just remember this workout, doing quarter repeats, and then some people would come and they'd just ask if they could join us and jump in. So they started jumping in, and pretty soon we had a little group of people. Like, we started saying, well, hey, you know, we get together on Sundays and run up to La Jolla and back, and up to the pier and back. And so we started doing like these, you know, 12, 13 mile runs every Sunday. And that kind of became a given. Every Sunday we would meet at the same point, same starting point, and go off. And then sometimes they change it up, and instead of going out to the pier, they'd go back and run, we called it the three bridges around the bay, Mission Bay. And so pretty soon there were like, I don't know, seven or eight guys, and they're all like probably in their 20s, maybe early 30s at that time. And they kind of dubbed themselves the B team, kind of a funny name. And then some of the wives and girlfriends would start running, and then we would actually compete as a group of gals called, you know, we were just there, we had a weird name, B cups. But anyway, but we always managed, we were always running. So we stayed in shape quite a bit, mainly because my ex was still running quite a bit and competing. And I did my best. I tried to make a comeback after my daughter, oldest daughter, was born. And I think I made it to where I think my best time was like 2:10 in the 800. But I knew that at that point in my life, if I wasn't running like 203s and 204s, I really didn't have a career in running,
right,
so to speak. But, you know, I was still competitive, and I still had a lot of fun. But then kind of turned to raising family, and that's what I did. And still running. So running was still part of pretty much our everyday existence. And then moved back to New Mexico in the late 80s and, you know, just kind of took a chance with a coaching job. The head coach hired me, saying, well, you know what it takes. So let's see what you can do. So it worked out really well, and I was very fortunate in that aspect.
How did you know you wanted to get into coaching? You said you just kind of took a leap, but what was it that kind of brought you into coaching?
So I have to say that it probably wasn't something I thought I would ever do. And so when the opportunity came up, there was an open position at the university. They said, yeah, Sue, you ought to try it, give it a shot. Because I had just come back to New Mexico, and I was just started teaching as a special ed teacher. And when I came down to looking at it, the pay was about the same, but the benefits were so much greater with being a coach and everything. And I said, well, you know what? I still have all my training records. I always kept diaries and my training records. And I said, you know, if I can't pull something from that, then there's something wrong, because I had some pretty good coaches back then.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know, I think I'd like to try it. So I tried it. And so I was able to do that for 10 years. And I was very happy with that.
And what was what did you coach during that time?
Pretty much the middle distances. And then I helped out with cross country. And so that was my first season. It was interesting because a lot of the, I didn't really have any female middle distance runners. You know, you would presume I was going to coach females. No, they had combined the men's and women's team at that point. So it was huge when I found out I had to coach men as well. As I said, okay, the basics and the fundamentals are still the same, so it shouldn't be any different. Yeah, that was pretty cool. A little resistance at the beginning, but after a while, I think the guys finally accepted me for what I knew and how I could help them.
All right. Well, I would have thought they would have accepted you just based on your credentials to begin with.
There's a little bit of, well, what happened was they lost their coach, which they were didn't expect.
Oh.
So they were a little upset about that. And then all of a sudden they have this female coach who, you know, what does she know?
Right.
But it changed. And I have to tell you, I'm still really good friends with some of my very first male athletes that I coached. So it's like we became family after so many years.
Well, that's really cool. I think the bond between a coach and the runner can be a pretty strong bond.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I'll have to share with you maybe later after this, a great quote from my coach, because we've reconnected. We were always good friends, but some of our Dasher girls all these years later got back together after the death of John Holland, who was a prominent high school coach here in town and coach of the Great Southwest.
Right.
He was one of the initial Dasher coaches, along with Tony Sandoval, who was my coach.
Okay.
And so after some of the girls reconnected, unfortunately at his services, a lot of things started coming out, like, you know, how much the influence that the coaches had on us as young women, and really kind of made us this amazing bond. And the lessons that we learned and the discipline that we learned from just the training that we did really, I think, kind of forged the women who we've become today.
That's really cool to know that you guys are still talking and close with each other like that.
Reconnected. It is a special bond. No matter, even kids, even student athletes I had over the years. It was only 10 years that I actually coached at UNM, but I will say of those 10 years, and thank goodness for Facebook and things like that, social media, I've reconnected with so many of them, and we share stories all the time still, and that's wonderful. Many of them have gone on to become coaches themselves, which makes me feel pretty good. You know, I felt like, yay, there's a little legacy there somewhere, hopefully, but anyway.
I think that is pretty cool. during your time coaching, your oldest daughter, Erin, was running at Sandia High School.
Mm-hmm.
And her specialty seemed to be the 800 as well. How did you balance your coaching time and making sure you were there to cheer her on?
That was a challenge because, of course, we had meets every weekend, just like the high school schools did. And so I was not able to be at every one of her meets, but wherever I could, someone could videotape for me or something, you know. It was a challenge, but if we were home and she was competing, I tried to make ways you know, as best I could. Always, I never missed a state championship that she was at. So that was really important to me. And I don't know, somehow our schedule worked out that way. I was very fortunate that, you know, the high school season does end sooner than the college meets. So right. That worked out pretty well. And she didn't want me coaching her, though. nor her dad.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I was curious if she ever, or if it was ever hard for you not to kind of give your input to her and mm-hmm. and say, well, maybe you should try this or work on this.
Yeah. You know, I try to give her a little advice here and there, but honestly, I have to say that her high school coaches were pretty good. And I think her last year, at least Carol Hudson Knobber was her coach, and Carol was like my nemesis while we were dashers. So I couldn't have asked for anybody better. I mean, she was a formidable athlete. Oh my gosh, she was an amazing athlete. I always admired, even though she was my main competitor locally, she was phenomenal. So I had no problems whatsoever. Someone like Carol helping Aaron.
You know, that's one of the things that as I'm doing research and talking to people, you know, the running community is so close in uh-huh. some areas. And so you see these kind of wraparounds of someone that you used to compete with, then coaching your daughter as you guys get older. And that made me think of, you know, it was pretty interesting as we were talking back and forth, setting this up, and you let me know that Tony Sandoval was coaching you with the Dashers and then had gone on to the University of California, which is where Aaron then ended up running.
Right.
Was that planned out? Did she just end up there like by accident and running for him? Or was he kind of keeping his eye on her?
No, I think she was recruited when she was born. We joked that it was a toss-up between wherever Tony was coaching or Villanova, where her dad went to college.
Okay.
So, and fortunately, the friendship worked out well enough, and she trusted Tony, and, you know, we're still family today. It's amazing. It's such a great, just blessed having that relationship, and the fact that he took a chance on her. Of course, he saw her talents as well, and she gave him her all, and he was able to bring out really the best in her. So that was awesome. If anybody could do it, he could do it. So that was good.
And I have to imagine that you just had the utmost confidence in sending her there with him as the coach.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no questions asked. So it was like, yay.
Now, Tony did recently retire after 37 years at Cal. He had, you know, many years of coaching before that, obviously, starting off with the Dashers. How did you know that 10 years was good enough for you?
So, yeah, that was just more, what happened there was around the time when I left that the university was actually looking for a different coach, head coach. And so they brought that coach in, and of course that coach had their own team, their own people they wanted to bring in, which was fine because I never imagined it would be a lifelong career for me. It was a great opportunity for me. And could I have gone on to coach in high school? Yes, I could have done that. I could have coached clubs, but I wasn't quite sure that was my true calling at the time. So it was just a opportunity for me to look for something different and a whole different career, as a matter of fact, going from teaching to coaching and then working at the university in their alumni office was a great opportunity for me there as well. And I put in 18 years with that and loved every minute of it. So it was okay with me.
You know, with the alumni office, I saw a video where you helped host a meeting with former athletes through UNM and everything. It seemed like you had some good experiences doing that, even though it's, like you said, a completely different career.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty social. I like building relationships with people, you know, and that was able to come through as a coach, you know, and I'd have a strong relationship there as well. But like I said, I don't think the coaching was my ultimate calling. I did enjoy the alumni office, and I loved having reunions. I like putting people back together and having them reminisce. And, you know, it's always good. It makes you feel good about your accomplishments in your past and being able to share them and even kind of bask on them years later, like we did with the Dashers recently. Right. You know, we recently had a weekend and we just talked the whole time about old times and made us feel good, kind of validated all the hard work that we put in.
I think that's good. And I think those stories are important to kind of continue on.
Yeah, and that's what's great about your podcast. Being able to share those stories.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's you know, a big reason why I started it is, you know, I wanted to share, you know, there's so many runners out here and everybody has their story, and I think they're all valid and important.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's always new friendships to be made too, you know, meaning just because I stopped coaching didn't mean I stopped running entirely. And I, you know, made some running, a group of friends got together. Actually, they became my friends after I started kind of coaching them. I started coaching them just for so they wanted to run a 10K Boulder, I think, Boulder. Oh, and right. They were, one of them worked with my husband and she had friends that wanted to train for it. And they asked if I'd be interested in helping them out. And I said, sure. And pretty soon, you know, we're best friends and I start training with them and I'm getting back in shape and having a great time. And then unfortunately my knees didn't hold out, but they finally took their toll on my knees. So I'm not able to run anymore, unfortunately, but I still have forged many friendships because of those opportunities to get together with people who like to run and train and have a good time.
That's amazing. And you read my mind. That was my next question, was do you still run? So
I wish I could say yes, but no. Had meniscus, too much of my meniscus removed. And that was after training for a half marathon. I think I was training for the rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling so good too. It was like the regret that all of a sudden I felt that pop and that was it. Yeah. But still, it's good. You know, I still try to get out and walk and exercise and get some fresh air and still compete in my brain sometimes. So I see people running by, I look at them very longingly and wish I could be with them. Yeah, that's, you know, you still have your glory days you can look back on and still enjoy it and think about what a great time it had been. And but life goes on and we do our best to maintain, you know, the gifts that the Lord gave us, and, you know, we're still breathing, walking as best we can and helping others if we can. And that's kind of what it's all about for me at this point.
I think that's a great way to look at things.
Yeah.
Like you said, you met this group of people, just started training them. They become really good friends. And, you know, I really don't think that coaching or teaching ever really kind of leaves a person. So if you had a team right now, you know, what would you be advising them during this time of no contact?
Still go out and run. I mean, they can still run. Like I said, you don't need to be, you can still be 6 feet away from someone. You can go out by yourself. You know, sometimes the best workouts are when you're out there by yourself and enjoying nature. You know, you can go for runs in the foothills. You can go down to the bosque. You can, you know, run just about anywhere. That's something that is not being taken away from us, at least not yet, knock on wood. And it's something that you still get a fulfillment in within yourself. And so if I was trying to tell someone to, you know, who's in the situation, it's hard, I know, just, you know, go out there and do it for yourself, but maybe feel like you're out there doing it for somebody else who can't leave their house at this time. And just say, you know what, I'm doing the best I can for me. I'm doing the best for my Lord, and also for, you know, anybody else who doesn't have the ability to go out there and do it. And if you've got the ability, then, you know, that's something that you can just do for yourself and feel like you're doing it for someone else as well. I don't know. It's hard. And I think for throwers, jumpers, sprinters, that's probably harder. If you can't get into a facility, that's probably hard. But even just getting outside and staying in shape is the best thing they can do. They can always do, you know, home training. You know, you can always do squats on, you know, there's all kinds of workouts you can do at home. I know that there were times when we'd send student athletes home for the winter break and they don't have a gym. So what do? You know, well, you know, do use the edge of your couch and do, you know, squats or lifts or, you know, all kinds of things you can do to keep your body strength up. So don't let it go to waste. Don't let it go for nothing.
I think that's some great advice. I think that's all we can do right now is just keep on moving.
Exactly. I think movement is our way to recovering from anything. If you're not moving, it's just going to set in more. So movement is your best friend right now.
What keeps you excited about the sport?
Watching, like, if it's new, like high school kids, you know, watching them, if they get better, then the excitement of knowing that they're getting better every time they go out there. The sport, you know, I watch some of the meets on TV. I don't always, there's not that many collegiate meets to go to here other than the indoor meets. And of course, those are always fun. I did miss the national championship this year. I was so sad. That's always just fun watching any competition, no matter what. It doesn't have to be track. It could be, you know, I love all kinds of sports, baseball, believe it or not, basketball. Just watching people move and put in their grit, you know, and just go for it. That's what I like.
It's always fun watching people compete. It's, I think, one of the things that people are struggling with now without being able to watch any of those competitions. Or baseball, like you said, is, you know, it's supposed to be starting up here soon, and we're all in limbo.
Yeah, I know. I think it'll be over soon, I hope. But, you know, in the meantime, just stay focused with your movements and doing something on a regular basis. Routine. Always, you know, routine is your best friend as well. So routine and moving.
What keeps you motivated?
That's a hard one. Motivation is hard because I think about it's so internal.
Yeah.
And it's hard unless you have a specific goal that's driving you to that. Unless you have something that's driving you to a specific goal, that's your motivation. And if you don't have that, then, you know, you're just kind of flopping around. And, you know, I think of some of our basketball players in the past and coaches saying, you can't teach motivation. And I said, well, you know, you can encourage motivation.
Yeah.
Just give them a goal. Give them something to work for, you know. Give them hope.
Right. So. What do you consider your biggest disappointment in coaching or running?
I think for me, I don't know if I have any disappointments. I don't dwell on disappointments, but if anything, if I was disappointed, it just made me want to work harder to get better. You know, if I was disappointed in that I didn't have a great meet, then, you know, it just made me work harder and want to get even better.
I think that's amazing. That's the way.
It's like learning from your mistakes. Well, you don't just give up. You pick yourself up and you fix it and you work harder, or you figure out a better way to do it. Maybe it's not doing a lot more work, because maybe it's not more work you need. Maybe you need to rest before you go, you know. Right. Just trying to figure out the right way to do things, you know. You can burn yourself out if you're not careful.
What do you think your biggest success in running was?
I think finishing my career knowing that I probably gave it all I had. You know, there could have been, you could always go back and say, well, I could have done a little bit more, but, you know, if you're happy with what you've done and you don't have too many regrets, then I think then I was always happy about that. You know, knowing what your limitations are is it's hard. It's that hard, finite line. Sometimes it's not so visible. And then, but you're kind of getting to a point where you say, you know, I think I gave it everything I had and I'm happy with that and being satisfied enough with that. And then knowing that maybe someday you can make an impact in a different way. Going from running to coaching, that was a great thing for me. You know, I enjoyed that. Or even when I left coaching, I was still working with students and just making an impact in someone's life to help them become someone better than they were, better than they were, maybe achieve a goal. That's always something that I always felt I was, if I could be successful at that, then I was proud of that.
I think that's a great way to look at things. Yeah, I got one more question for you. What's your go-to song to get yourself up and moving or motivated or...
Oh my gosh, I'm so bad with names and tunes and things, but there was one, oh my gosh, it was an 80s techno kind of thing. I think it was on the movie The Nerds, and I just remember I had to do these hill repeats, and I would put that on super loud and just bang away at getting up the top of the hill. And I would try to get up there before it was over, you know. It's like my goal was to get there before a certain part of the song, yeah. But it was like, you know, pounding in your ears, like totally upbeat. Gosh, I wish you remember that. It was like, it was kind of crazy. And I don't even listen to 80s music, techno music. But that particular one always got me up that hill. And so that was always fun.
Where were you?
I don't have a specific song. Sorry.
No, that's right. Where were you doing these hills at? Here in Albuquerque?
No, I was in San Diego. Okay. It was running to the top of Mount Soledad, or Soledad Mountain. And it was probably about a half-mile stretch. Wow. And just trying to get up to the top of that. I mean, like, oh, God, you know, just get up there.
Yeah, that's a good hill.
Yeah. So fortunately, if I get up there before the song is over, I was good.
Yeah.
But some of those lasted a little bit longer than normal. So, yeah. You know, they were like, kind of went on.
That's all the questions I have for you. Is there anything else you wanted to mention or bring up?
Just want to say, you know, it's been a good life. I've been happy. I had a great upbringing, principles, values, dedication, discipline with my coach, with Tony Sandoval. He really has been the rock behind, I think, who I've become. Kind of has pointed me in the right direction. And then I think he trained us well enough to know that life's not always going to be easy, you know, just like our track was. Then there's always something better to look forward to. And I think that principle always carried over growing up and even moving forward in our individual lives. And I think that was something that I keep going back to our little Dasher weekend. It was just so very special that we all came away feeling like we had something very special. And how fortunate we were to have that opportunity in our lives to make us the young women we were, and strong women. And, you know, that's something that I can't ever deny. That was, you know, coaching at that time. My coach at that time was just the best thing that could have ever happened to us at that time.
Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for sharing your time with me today.
Oh, thanks for asking me. And I just want to wish everyone out there to chin up, stick with it through this crazy time of our lives. It's unusual, but if you're all the strong athletes that you've trained to be, you'll get over it, and you'll again figure out a better way to get through it, and you'll do fine. So best wishes to everyone.
Thank you for taking the time to join me today. If you can, please rate and review, but most importantly, spread the word so we can grow this community. If you know of any runners that deserve a shout out or should be interviewed, or you just want to share your runs and connect with other people, use the hashtag RunningNM on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow me at RunningNM on both these platforms. If you prefer to reach out by email, you can find me at runningnewmexico@gmail.com. Music was provided by Philip Friedman. You can follow him on SoundCloud under DJ Teach. And until next time, keep running, New Mexico.